Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Welcome. We head into the holiday season or come out of the holiday season, everybody goes, oh my gosh, I ate too much. What do I need to do to lose a few pounds? What do I need to do to lose a few pounds now and maybe keep it off?
Sure.
In the course of your work, you have been given the opportunity to examine almost everything, haven't you?
All colors of the spectrum, you could say, in terms of weight challenges, yes.
When it comes to losing weight, what's the most important thing that we need to understand?
Well, first of all, it's all relative to the amount of excess weight that a person is carrying, because increasingly, as a person carries more and more excessive weight, we have to understand the body remembers your maximum weight, and that's the weight it will want you to be, or more.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, so there is a set point. It's like a thermostat that is different than your body temperature. If your body temperature goes down, your body will fight to get it back up again. Maybe it'll, you know, make you feel cold, you put on clothes, get by a warm fire, eat something, you know, to warm you up, whatever, get out for some exercise. Your body has thermal regulation mechanisms to burn some extra calories for heat and so on. If your temperature goes high, you'll sweat, you know, you'll find, you know, a way to get your clothes off and get in some cool breeze. So the temperature always gravitates back to that normal range. But weight is different. As your weight goes upwards, instead of it going back down to normal, the normal your body considers for your weight ratchets upwards. Think of a ratchet or like a bicycle. You can pedal one direction, but when you stop, it goes click, click, click like that. It always wants to only go one way. And that's your weight. So as you gain.
So you're telling me that if you gain weight, that's your new body weight.
That's your new normal. Exactly. Your body will fight for survival based around that new normal. We call that the set point. It used to be a theory. Really isn't a theory. Those of us in obesity research understand that the set point is no longer a theory. We don't completely understand its mechanisms. We do understand some, but for sure it's no longer a theory. It's true. When you gain weight, that's your new normal, and your body will fight for that weight back. It considers that your only real asset. Doesn't care what car you drive or what house you live in, but it really cares about your weight, and it will fight like it does for oxygen, water, sex, whatever, things that are necessary for your survival and the survival of the species, it will fight very hard for that weight to return. So keep that in mind when you lose weight.
So the most you've ever weighed is actually your set point.
Yeah.
Is there
Unfortunately,
any way
I wish it weren't so, but it's true.
There's no way of resetting that?
Unfortunately, you know, the weight loss industry has perpetuated a mythology that continues to be re-perpetuated by the media, like Biggest Loser and things like that. The medical profession has bought into this. They treat particularly serious, you know, you go to your doctor and you've got serious issues related to your weight. Maybe it's type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes or hypertension or sleep apnea. Your joints are starting to ache and so on. And you say, you know, what should I weigh, doc? And the doc, you know, points at the BMI chart to 24, you know, the perfect weight, and wags his finger, and that's the primary treatment. You know, get off your butt and get into action and eat less and exercise. Well, good in theory, but the problem is the more weight you've gained, the more this becomes a real prison, essentially.
Holy smokes. Okay, but let's say you now go, all right, you're scaring me into thinking, like, what's the point? But you still decide, no, there is value, because there is value in losing weight.
Oh, yeah.
Because your body does benefit from it.
Oh, yeah, and in fact, you know, the weight loss industry, again, it wants you to believe that if you don't lose enough weight to look like you did when you're in your 20s, it's, you know, it's no good. That's not true. We do know that, for instance, people with a real excess in weight, you know, obesity, that have accompanying problems, say, you know, type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, things that are truly associated with their weight. If those people simply start by not gaining more weight, a lot of the negative metabolic effects of their weight gain begin to ameliorate. So essentially,
just on their own, just because they've stopped increasing their weight.
Yeah, so people with serious weight problems, if you look backwards in their life at the trajectory of weight gain and you draw a line from, say, their 20s to their 50s or whatever, you know, you can say it's got a certain slope. And that means that if you go forward another 10 years, most likely, if nature takes its course, they'll gain even further weight from there. So if they just simply say they're 40 and they've gained, you know, 10 pounds a decade or 50 pounds a decade, if from 40 to 50 they just don't gain any more weight, in essence it's almost like losing 50, you know, if they've gained 50 pounds every 10 years and then they don't gain any weight from 40 to 50, it's like losing 50 pounds when you hit 50, because that's what you would have been if nature had taken its course. So, you know, you got to get into a different mentality. It's a long-term mentality. It's where smaller goals can actually be pretty big successes, because it's better to not gain any weight, and that's it, than to lose, say, 50 pounds and then regain 60, which is typically what happens. So you get into a different mindset. You get into a long-term mindset where you know this is going to be something I work at for the rest of my life. Doesn't matter what Dr. Oz has said or what, you know, this diet center says, there's no such thing as permanent weight loss. It's something you work at every day. It doesn't mean necessarily that weight maintenance is harder. It certainly requires daily vigilance. And as time goes on, the key is you have to develop a new rhythm of life. You know, that's what I spend a lot of my time doing. We spend hundreds of hours with people, giving them new knowledge, giving them strategies and skills to develop a new rhythm of life, you might say.
Got to get you to hang on for just 1 second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program. Thank you.
So what are some of those strategies and skills?
Well, for instance, you start with the simple stuff, okay? It's not about, you know, should it be high carb, low carb, you know, whatever. This is almost irrelevant in the long term, to be honest with you. Everybody's on their bandwagon for which weight loss diet is best. That's not as important as, for instance, the simple things like eating throughout the day.
So small meals throughout the day?
You know, 80% of the people I see with serious weight problems, they have the same pattern. They either skip breakfast or they eat, you know, whatever, a little breakfast cereal and a whatever lunch. And then they eat most of their calories in the evening. You know, it's the pattern I see over and over and over again. If we can simply get people to eat more sensibly and rhythmically, so that they get up in the morning, they eat, especially for breakfast, enough protein. And they don't eat something like starch or sugar that spikes their blood sugar. And, you know, you've got to realize that if it's not sugary, it doesn't mean it's not sugar. Starch is sugar. It is sugar. It's not just that it becomes sugar. It is sugar.
It's not just volume, it's also what you're eating.
Yeah, it is sugar. So we go by more the glycemic impact of the food than whether it's starch or sugar. But, you know, you start the morning with a breakfast cereal, boom, up goes your blood sugar. You know, or toast and jam, boom, up goes your blood sugar. And then later on when the insulin starts to do its job, then the blood sugar goes down and you're chasing this blood sugar roller coaster all day. So preferable is to start the morning with a higher protein breakfast that is very smooth on the blood sugar. So you start with a nice message to your body saying, I'm not starving today. The most important nutrition that I need is protein. And you just give your body a nice, you know, 20 or 30 gram breakfast in terms of protein. And you say to your body, we're not starving today. Boost that metabolism a bit. It's in a way, it's sort of like a campfire. You get up in the morning, the campfire is gone down because you didn't feed it through the night. What are you going to do? You're going to wait till dinner time to start putting wood on the fire and then dump it all on at once? What happens? Well, you get a bit of a flame, but you get more smoke, right?
Yeah.
Think of that as fat. You wait till the evening and you start nibbling away in the evening, you're going to get more fat deposition from your meal. If you start to feed the fire throughout the day, you get a nice hot, you know, in this case, metabolism, and you tend to store less as fat.
With a focus on protein.
Yeah.
But not a huge amount. You're just talking 30 to 40
grams. I'm not saying you eat excessive protein, but you eat enough. And you eat it more evenly spaced throughout the day than any other nutrient.
So
you can
more protein,
skip carbs through a lot of the day and be fine. Carbohydrates are not nutrition. They are fuel. That's fuel. Okay. There's three main nutrients in our diet, or macronutrients. There's carbohydrates, starch and sugar, and fiber, but you don't digest that, so we'll just say starch and sugar. There's fat, which is, you know, fats and oils, good and bad, but they're necessary. You need fats to stay alive. They're essential nutritional elements. And then there's protein, which again is essential. Carbohydrate is optional. You only need that for fuel. Your body can make it from protein. It stores it in the muscles from the day before, whatever, and the liver. It stores enough carbohydrates in the form of glycogen, which is kind of a syrupy, sugary starch. It's in your muscles and liver, almost enough for the average athletic person to run a marathon race. So you've got carbs on hand anytime you need them in your muscles and liver.
And enough to run a marathon?
Just about. The marathon runners all know about hitting the wall, you know, about three quarters of the way into the marathon. Mm-hmm. For a typically fit person, they find all of a sudden it becomes unbelievably difficult.
And that's because they've depleted those carb reserves,
the glycogen, and now they're running on, you know, they're starting to have to burn fat more than your body likes all of a sudden. So essentially you start the morning with with enough protein for breakfast and enough calories that you tell your body, I'm not starving. You boost the metabolism and you feel this sense of satiety. If you skip breakfast instead, it's like borrowing from a loan shark. So what happens later in the day? The loan shark wants those calories back that you ripped off or you borrowed in the morning, but with interest, right? So if you skip breakfast thinking, well, you know, I ate too much last night, I'm going to skip breakfast because I'm not hungry, if that's a pattern you get into, you're going to overeat again the next evening.
So that brings up a question. So I have that first meal in the morning. Do I wait until I'm hungry before I eat again, or do I, like, how do I gauge when I should eat again?
You know, initially, we teach people to eat on a schedule with a very, you know, structured pattern of living, basically. They've got to learn, they've got to know, you know, learn what is the right way to eat and then eat that way, and then your body has to adjust around that. And if you do, eventually that becomes very satisfying. You feel more energy, you feel more, you know, cognitively alive, and you start to find that you can handle the evening and the binges and the things that you're maybe troubled with a lot easier.
So somebody who's watching right now goes, okay, well, how long between breakfast and the next food intake?
Well, there should be a snack, but you've got to differentiate between a treat and a snack. A lot of the crap that we call snacks are not snacks, that's just crap.
Treats maybe, but
you've got to eat snacks that are strategically nutritious for you. It doesn't mean that they can't taste good.
Yeah.
You know, like nuts, excellent snack. But, you know, you've got to measure the quantity.
Because there's a lot of fat in nuts.
Yeah, think of, you know, any nut and seed is basically 1,000 calories per cup. So that could be, for some people, two-thirds of their daily calorie needs in a cup of nuts, which is, you know, if you just sort of get into the nut jar and you gob, 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 it's 1,000 calories
right now. Which is really easy to do.
So you put a measuring, like, you know, usually say an eighth of a cup measuring scoop in the nut jar, or you buy the, you know, you go to store by the single serving, like Costco is these single serving sachets, which are really two snacks, they're like over 300 calories, but 100 to 150 calories is a good snack. And that's a strategic snack. A snack is something that offsets appetite so that you don't get to your next meal without control.
And you're still stoking the fire.
Yeah, then you're stoking that fire of metabolism. Essentially what you're doing is you're trying to train your appetite regulation system, which has gone haywire, to be more normal and accepting of the appropriate amount of food again.
Unfortunately, I got to stop you for just a second while we take a second break here. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program. Thank you.
So if I'm used to having a burger and fries, isn't it going to be quite a shock to my system to change to this kind of food intake? And isn't my body going to be saying, where's all that stuff that I'm used to eating?
Yeah, I mean, there's some element of addiction in people's eating behaviors sometimes, and that's true when you get the foods that are really super sensual, the fast foods, the junk foods. Those are foods that you know, it's almost the same when you look at the neurobiology of eating junk foods. It's almost the same as using a, you know, like cocaine or whatever that lights up certain pleasure centers in the brain and causes dopamine to be, you know, to be richly rewarding those areas of the brain. There's almost no difference when you look at the final, you know, button that's pushed when you're eating, you know, fries and a burger. It's almost the same as when someone snorts cocaine. So you're setting yourself up for, you know, patterns of behavior that are less easy to get away from, but you can still break the pattern. The first step is always to learn and you know, healthier way of eating and then follow through. Like even binge eating disorder, which is a true eating disorder, mm-hmm. you know, in the camp of anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder is a fully recognized eating disorder. And sometimes it, you know, they have anorexia as a early teenager, it morphs into bulimia later, and then it becomes binge eating disorder later than that. And wow. the first step in treating binge eating disorder is getting people to eat on a very regimented basis, eating healthy foods that are going to target their appetite centers in a way that never lets them, you know, get to the point where they're, you know, there's binging capable foods mm-hmm. in front of them and there's no control.
So breakfast, snack, does that get us to lunch now?
Yeah. So, you know, breakfast, strategic snack, mid-morning, lunch, strategic snack, mid-afternoon, dinner, and then something usually in the evening. And you do that and you can, you know, you may not have a clue how many calories you're eating at first, so it's a good idea to get a simple tracker like a MyFitnessPal in your phone and start mm-hmm. to track your calories. I mean, if you want to know
the number of wearable devices and stuff.
Yeah, there's
these
wearable
days.
Things. Yeah. You know, I'd say, you know, use what's free and evidence-based as possible. And there's tons of evidence that keeping food records is like a huge win and one of the best long-term strategies to maintain weight loss. You've got to start by getting a sense for how much you really eat. People usually think that their problem is primarily their metabolism is low. At my clinic, we actually measure people's metabolism. We have a thing called an indirect calorimeter. So it's a device that people, they come in, they have to fast and be resting, and you know, it's a controlled situation you're measuring and trying to get them in the resting state as much as possible. And then you have them breathe through this thing for about 10 minutes and it measures their oxygen consumption and the amount of volume of air they're breathing. And it is able to calculate the resting energy expenditure of their metabolism. And it's quite unusual, not rare, but unusual when we see a bigger person that doesn't have a bigger metabolism.
So the bigger person has the bigger metabolism.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the bigger you are, the bigger your metabolism. There's more of you to keep alive. Simple as that. Now, if you're 350 pounds and you don't have much muscle mass, you're not going to have as high a metabolism as a 350-pound NFL football player. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference there. But in reality, we can sit down with a simple calculation and based on your age, whether you're male or female, your height and your weight, we can tell you within usually 50 calories how many calories your body needs at rest in a given day.
That's important to know when you're trying to measure the amount of calories you're yep. going to take in yep. versus that you need so that you can then start to lose weight.
Exactly.
So based on what you were saying about the fact that we've set a new set point, mm-hmm. what happens to our metabolism when we start to lose weight? Is it speeding up then?
No, then it goes down.
Your metabolism goes down.
Always, yeah. No matter what
because it's
somebody tells you about
to get you
green
back up,
coffee or Garcinia Cambogia or any of those things, there's nothing that's going to keep your metabolism from going down when you lose weight because there's less living tissue to keep alive. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have some effect on your metabolism. If you start losing weight while you start a serious weight training program and you increase your protein intake and add muscle mass while you're losing weight, well, yeah, you can maintain metabolism much better. But the reality is if you lose substantial amounts of weight, you're going to lose substantial amounts of calorie requirements in your day.
Final break. We'll be back shortly.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program. Thank you.
So how important is exercise then in being able to lose weight? Because you see people do it all the time.
Sure.
And I've done it. I go, okay, I'm going to lose weight. I start to exercise. And the next thing I know, I'm putting on weight. And people go, oh, muscle weighs more than... I'm thinking, I think I'm eating more.
Well, let me say it. Yeah. The exercise is the single most important thing you can ever do for your health every day. Like there's nothing...
But health is the operative word there.
Health, yeah. So if exercise could be put into a pill, it'd be worth... There would be no price you could be put on it. It would be the most priceless, most valuable discovery in medicine would be this exercise in a pill.
Because it's good for
but
everything.
I can tell you what it wouldn't be is a weight loss pill. It's not a weight loss pill. Exercise is not non-essential for weight loss, but it is almost non-essential for weight loss. And you know, people will go, that's not true.
Well, again, possible?
The weight loss industry has perpetuated a mythology which, you'd think common sense. You exercise more, you burn calories, you lose weight. It's not the way it works. Your body will know exactly how many calories you burn during your exercise, and it will compel you to eat those calories and usually a little bit more. So,
and you can't win that argument?
Almost never. In fact, the toughest cases I work with in terms of people that need to lose substantial amounts of weight and then not achieve their goals are the ones that will not give up the extreme exercise. Now, again, not saying exercise isn't important. I mean, I'm like an exercise maniac. I love exercise. You know, I have to exercise every day or I'm not alive almost. Mm-hmm. I love exercise. I grew up with a weight problem, and I always believed that, I needed to exercise more to lose weight. Now I realize that this is what the evidence says, and it's true for almost everyone. And when you are a person that's gained weight and you need to lose weight, you need to focus on calorie reduction to achieve your weight loss goal. And when you've achieved your weight loss goal, exercise moves up to nearly first place for weight maintenance, mm-hmm. but not for weight loss.
I guess the other part of it is be conscious of what you're consuming.
Yeah, we're more inclined to say that the best diet is the diet that is going to be the healthiest diet that you can live on long term and truly enjoy. Because if you don't enjoy it, you're eventually going to fall off the wagon and eat something else. So, if you're on the Atkins diet, there's a healthy way to do that. But can you stay on the Atkins diet for the rest of your life? The problem is, you're eating this diet that's basically a high fat, high protein diet, mostly high fat. And then one day you get sick of not eating carbs and all of a sudden the starch comes back in, and then it's the worst diet in the world. It's like the mm-hmm. the ultimate worst diet. So, if you're eating, salmon and salad and, healthy Atkins sort of foods, and then all of a sudden you put the carbs back in, like it's the worst diet there is. So mm-hmm. you go from a reasonable diet to a terrible diet in one small mistake. So it's better to start with something sustainable and build on that and, create a lifestyle that you can enjoy and live with. So, for instance, what is a person's best weight? Same kind of concept. Is it some sort of BMI number that we point to at a chart? No. Your best weight is going to be the healthiest weight you can achieve and maintain long-term while living the healthiest lifestyle you can truly enjoy. That's it. Like, that's as good as it gets. So, there's a lot in that,
Yep.
Healthiest lifestyle you can achieve and maintain long-term. While living the healthiest lifestyle you can truly enjoy. So, at our center, we help people truly enjoy a healthier way of life. So hopefully they can shift the paradigm quite a bit, and people can. You can learn to really enjoy super healthy food. And then if your food is like, you're loving it and you're enjoying it, but it's satisfying your body and you're feeling full on less, then that's a big win. That's better than what diet should I be on? Should it be low carb, high carb, paleo, gluten free, whatever? It's going to be a diet that's going to be the healthiest diet you can live on and truly enjoy. That's the best diet for you.
That's a great place for us to wrap up. Thank you very
much.
Appreciate you coming in and doing this.
Sure.